Welcome to the Africa Tech Summit podcast, sharing insights from across the African tech scene. Today's episode is kindly supported by Raynest and was recorded live at Africa Tech Summit London. Stay tuned for great insights and a discount code to join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi, powered by Raynest.
So hello everyone, great to be back here at the Africa Tech Summit in London. I feel like I'm part of the furniture, literally I don't know how many years running. I've been moderating a session here, so it's always nice to see the wider ecosystem. My name is Nkiru Waje, I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Manza. We're a DeFi platform providing liquidity to businesses in emerging markets. It's been obviously a very turbulent 12 months, to say the least. There's been continued economic ups and downs, revolving currency risks, boiling political issues, as we all know, governmental upheaval, regulatory reforms, and the list goes on. And this has obviously put a lot of strain on businesses. But albeit the turbulent environment, fintech in Africa continues to beat the odds and continues to grow. So on today's panel, we will be discussing the state of African fintech, key trends, challenges across the continent, especially around regulation, funding environment, the role of emerging tech, and of course, new market entries that are shaping the continent. But before we jump in, a quick introduction from each of our panelists. Over to you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Luam Kafala. I'm a principal at Partech Africa. Partech is a global VC firm with over $3 billion in assets under management. For our Africa strategy, we manage about $450 million across two funds. We're deploying out of our second fund and invest in companies from Seed Plus to Series C with initial checks between $1 million and $15 million. We've invested thus far in 20 startups across 9 countries in Africa. Great to be here with you guys.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. I'm Frank Atube, Simfix, the Chief Operating Officer. So in Simfix, we focus on solving identity management problems across issuance of identities and verification of identities. Thus far, we've been able to service over 300 million Africans verifying their IDs and also issuing identities to them. Today, we serve in different markets, primarily Nigeria, Uganda, Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, with intentions to expand to more.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Chinne Agu, and I work in Fortaway as Vice President of Sales and Head of Payment Service Providers. Flutterway, we pretty much support businesses globally to facilitate payments. Currently, we're present in over 30 African countries, and what we essentially do is to create that bridge between both domestic and international, you know, payment networks via a single API, ensuring that we're able to support small, medium businesses, enterprise, large enterprise businesses across board, you know, while ensuring that we also support cross-border remittances, supporting Africans in diaspora to, you know, essentially send gifts and funds to their loved ones in Africa. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Babs. I'm the founder and CEO at CUDA. We're a digital-only bank, providing essentially affordable and accessible financial services to people in Africa. We're primarily in Nigeria at the moment. We have about 7 million customers in Nigeria. I'll argue that probably one of the fastest growing sort of retail financial institutions in the country. We're in the UK as well. We just got our licenses in Canada and Tanzania, so we'll be looking at launching in those markets pretty soon as well. I'm just happy to be here and to meet everybody in the session.
Yeah. All right, hi, I'm Stephen Olowotobi. I'm Chief Operating Officer at Kora. So Kora is a Pan-African payment infrastructure company, and our focus is to enable businesses to be able to process transactions. Basically, with a single API, you're able to do business in Africa, basically. We believe strongly in a future, an African future, basically, where businesses could do the kind of business that they don't have to integrate, you know, APIs for every country that they go to, but in Africa they're able to do business at scale. You get in and then you're able to, you know, scale your business beyond geographical boundaries. We're also present in a couple of African countries, including Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, Egypt, South Africa, UK, Europe, Canada as well.
Great. Well, I think to start off, it would be really great to have a little bit more insights around the funding landscape in Africa. I think it's been top of mind for many businesses who are currently raising. So Luam, maybe you can give us a little bit more context as we're looking at it from a more broader perspective.
Sure, yeah, happy to. So I think 2023 was definitely a funding decrease year for Africa. We look at the global VC ecosystem, we started to see the downturn happen in 2022. It took a little bit longer for it to sort of affect Africa, and in 2023 we sort of saw that hit. It was, I believe, about 40 to 50% year over year down, which was a big shock to the ecosystem. I think it's important though to remind everyone that that needs to be put in context. Like what was happening with the global VC landscape, but then also that we exist and live in cycles in this industry. And so there's cycles where we're kind of in a boom, and then there's cycles where we're in a bust. And what was happening around 2023 was there was a lot of pullback from emerging markets. There were a lot of developed market funds that had sort of rushed into the market in 2020, 2021 that were pulling back. What is maybe more exciting and a silver lining to me is that there are more funds that are focused on Africa and earmarked for Africa now than there ever has been in the past, including ours, but there's quite a few on the Series A, Series B side now, and then there's more on the seed side. So there's a lot of like resurgence I think we expect over the next couple of years in terms of funding. And then as we continue to see some of the more mature stories across the African landscape start to get towards exit activity, I think that will create another level of resurgence into the funding landscape generally. So I'll always like set this in context and say, yes, 2023 was a bit of a tough year. And yes, 2024 from a macro perspective, to your point, has been a bit of a tough year as well. But from my perspective, it's actually been quite a good thing in a way, because it's like these really high tension macroeconomic events that we were all expecting to happen happened. And so now there's like this level of economic macroeconomic relief that we're sort of seeing. Yes, it means some level of reset and readjustment, but it also means another level of stability that we didn't have in 2023 and 2022. So to me, that's kind of a good signal of what's to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree, right? We all anticipated these tensions and knew that, we weren't done with some of the, let's say, downfalls. but it's really also good to hear, from, again, an investor perspective that there are much more funds that are earmarked. So hopefully the second half of this year and into 2025, we're going to see more of that funding go and funnel into the continent.
Absolutely.
So wanting to take the hat of these macroeconomic situations would be really great to hear a little bit more from the rest of the panelists as well. What have been some of the key challenges that you have been having to navigate over the last 12 months? Maybe we can kick off with Babs.
Thank you.
Since you have so many.
I think it's, yeah, especially in Nigeria. I mean, I see Nigeria as, I'm biased obviously because I'm Nigerian, but I see Nigeria as one of the most important economies in Africa, not just from a commercial perspective, just even from a cultural perspective, mm-hmm. So whatever happens there kind of, I think affects everywhere, on the continent and outside. And I think there's been a lot happening over the last 12 months, from a technology perspective, from a political perspective, from a policy perspective, from a funding perspective. Mm-hmm. So all of these things, I think, has had an effect on businesses and also on expectations of customers. I think when we saw the fintech, I would say probably the fintech boom sort of started around 2018, I would say, and really took off in 2020, 2021. There were a lot of sort of companies building different things. Whether that was valid or not. I'm not really sure because, you know, we had a lot of, I mean, I don't know how many savings apps we have in Nigeria or how many, you know, very similar businesses. So I think that wasn't so good. But what has happened now is, even though there's less funding, it's kind of made entrepreneurs more creative in sort of the kind of products they're trying to bring out. It has to be valid. It has to have a need for the customers to use it because, you know, your business needs to survive. Essentially, your customers become your investors now, rather than investors being sort of creating different types of products, whether it's needed or not. So I think there are good and bad things that the lack of funding has caused. From a regulatory perspective, I think, you know, regulators, and I remember like when we were starting, one of the conversations we had with the regulators, they told us that, we need to make sure our compliance is great and whatnot. And I said, yeah, it's good. You know, I'm ex-PwC, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, but you know, if you're successful, other people are gonna do this and we're not sure if their compliance is gonna it's gonna be a problem for us. And I think we're seeing that now. You know, so a lot of businesses came out. The regulators were not as sort of as fast in understanding, and they've taken their time, they've understood, they've now come back with a, sort of quite a big stick. You know, we were recently restricted from opening accounts, now we've been unrestricted. But, you know, a lot is changing. You know, companies and founders innovate much faster than regulators. But then, you know, what has happened over the last 12 months, especially in Nigeria, is funding has reduced, regulators have been smarter, businesses and growth has really slowed down with the combination of those two things. Customers are more agitated because all the things that they were able to do before, they were excited, they can't do that anymore. They don't really understand, you know, like for me, how do I educate 7 million customers on, oh, it's because of the XYZ. So, and all of these things, I think also contributes to sort of customer confidence. So it's a lot of sort of, I think, work that we need to do more collectively now rather than sort of individually. So these are like sort of all the different challenges that I see. So I don't sort of isolate one from the other. I think it's almost like when it rains, it falls, like everything is just happening at the same time. So it's been very tricky, but I think that's kind of where the sort of, I would say, the surest businesses emerge. So if you can survive sort of now over the next sort of 12 to 18 months, then I think you'll have a really, really strong, sustainable business like into infinity.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a silver lining that, you know, out of it.
Absolutely agree. And I love you talked about the, you know, customer expectations and traction building. I think, you know, that points back into, there were, let's be honest, many businesses that, let's say, were not producing traction and were not going into revenue, forget even profitability, right? And we need to remember that an ecosystem is great, but the ecosystem needs to positively contribute to that underlying GDP. You touched upon regulation as well, and we'll definitely dive deeper into that and unpack that. I'd love to hear from more of a payments perspective as well, Shinenya. Maybe you can dive into like Flutterwave's kind of top of mind pieces that you've seen kind of in the last 12 months as, you know, interesting challenges, you know, that has been presented.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nkiru. I think from a payments perspective, right, I'll say like two main things come to mind. One is around the currency devaluation that has affected not just Nigeria, but literally several countries in the continent, right? And also, you know, with regards to, you know, navigating, you know, the regulatory frameworks that have been changing due to the changes, you know, from a political standpoint, you know, trying to ensure that we remain compliant at all, you know, across all fronts. And, you know, in addition to that, you know, we've also seen a very high increase in threats to, you know, cybersecurity, data breaches, you know, and I'll say that my view on this really is around, you know, us as an ecosystem handling it as a problem within the ecosystem and not just viewing it in isolation, you know, when it comes to the threats that fintechs are facing in Africa, right? And if we're able to do that as a body of people trying to work towards building something that is sustainable, you know, we'll be able to conquer. You know, we'll be able to rub minds together to say, okay, look, how do we fix this? You know, like several companies within the past 12 months have had to face this. And it's not something that is unique to Africa, you know, or tech in general. One beautiful thing about Africa is that once we latch onto something, you know, innovative and we're, you know, prepared to move forward, we literally fly, you know. Developed markets, yes, they could probably start, but when we say, look, it's tech, we want to digitize, like we're running, you know, and even by doing so, you know, of course we'll face those challenges, but if we work as a team, a community together, you know, we'll be able to triumph. You know, with regards to currency devaluation, of course, as a business, you know, even within not just Nigeria, across, you know, Egypt had their own bits, fair share of things. Nigeria had, you know, we went from like having fixed rates to like trying to, you know, sync everything together. Didn't work. We even decided to, you know, throw in a couple of other companies as the cause of our problems, you know. And right now, we all know where the Naira is to, you know, hard currency, right? So all of these things has affected, you know, the fintech technological space. Also, large enterprises trying to penetrate into the continent and have like a sustainable, you know, payment landscape. Okay, fine, I'm collecting in X currency, domestic currency. How do I get, you know, FX? You know, things like that. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why companies like ours, you know, Flutterwave, you know, actually are open to, or have actually even tried to partner with, of course, with the support from the Central Bank of Nigeria, you know, even create like a product that we call Swap, Swap by Flutterwave, right? Swap by Flutterwave essentially is a product that helps, you know, people, individual businesses have access to FX, you know, PTA, BTA, ETC. You know, we had partners come in, different banks, you know, BDC, certified BDC operators, and we created this amazing product that has also helped, you know, to help things a bit easier for businesses within the Nigeria space. But it's been a major issue, and of course we hope that it will improve across Africa and our currency has find a more stable landing and can actually encourage investors, enterprise businesses, even small, medium businesses trying to penetrate into the continent to feel, you know, at ease and confident that when they come in, you know, they would have the support from not just us from a payment standpoint, but also from the regulatory standpoint, it's a bit more stable for them to find a very good landing.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I love what you said, you know, this is not an African problem. And across all geographies, right, I think there's always like tension because things are moving quickly. There's a lot of new emerging technology. And, you know, I haven't worked in cybersecurity before. I remember very specifically somebody saying to me, you know, as we progress, let's be honest, the hackers progress even faster, right? Yeah. So the same technology and the same risk exist across all these different pockets. So Stephen, would be great to hear from you as well in terms of being in a similar space. What have been some of the stones that have been pressing the shoes?
Thank you so much, Jankiru. So I think Chinene and Babs beautifully captured the issues in the last 12 months. And I think these issues didn't just happen just because of the last 12 months. In a number of those things, you know, this is a critical mass of things that we built like over time. So let's zone in, first of all, on the whole regulatory issue. I agree 100% with Babs that the regulator still needs to be educated. For every single thing they're ignorant about, it will be like a threat on what we're doing. So, and that's why I totally support the whole idea of we need to really come together to educate the regulators. And even the traditional banks, you know, still do things like that. Like in Nigeria, for instance, there's the Bankers Committee, where the who is who, those who are leading these banks, you know, come together to also influence things in government. I think that's a stage that we should be considering to address some of these issues. As it relates to the forex exposures, which Chine mentioned, critical mass also. So let's even look at the whole idea of what we say fintech really is about. It's basically providing financial services, leveraging on technology, simple. It still boils down to what Africa is doing, how much Africa is producing. And if I connect this to Forex, for instance, now, and the state and value of the currency, what actually determines the value of a currency? Basic economics, you know, tells us about the forces of demand and supply. To what extent are they demanding African currencies as against the dollar? Because these factors will also contribute to the value of what the local currencies are like in Africa. So what should African countries be doing to ensure that there's more demand for local African currencies as against, you know, the dollar, for instance, which will also, you know, impact on what the value of the currency would be. And then, you know, and for that to happen, production has to supersede consumption in Africa, just like it happens in more advanced economies. What fintech basically does is to provide the infrastructure to enable those exchanges, the provision of financial services. So it still boils down to what are businesses in Africa doing in terms of production to ensure that there is external demand for African products that can lead to the demand for African currencies, that will increase the value of African currencies. And that can enable, you know, businesses like us, you know, fintechs, to be able to provide and enable them to be able to, you know, transact effectively. And so the whole system grows. So this basically is a critical mass of things that have happened, you know, build up over time. So as we play our part, educating the regulators also includes, you know, providing, you know, very healthy environment for people to really produce, whether it be tangible or intangibles, so that at least we can accelerate Africa's growth. And then, you know, fintechs, though we're doing, you know, a great job at our level, there's still a lot that we have to get done. And there is more that we can achieve if we can, you know, solve the simple basics of production and producing, you know, in Africa. You know, and this is not to say that we're going to produce 100% of the things that we consume. We definitely need to, you know, import, you know, a number of things. But when, you know, our consumption, you know, far outweighs production, it will tell in the value of the currency, and a number of exposures that we'll face will continually happen. So it's a critical mass of a number of things. Cyber threat also, same thing. I mean, and it's going to be on the increase. So even if, so let's even say that globally, I mean, some could still condone and say 0.02%, you know, fraud rate, you know, can be condoned. It now boils down to what's the difference between 0.02% of $1 million value transaction as against $100 million dollar value transaction, and what should we be doing to hedge against this? Because it's going to, as you mentioned, it's going to be on the increase. They are not sleeping; it's their job, it's their 9 to 5, and so we also have to begin to think about that. And we've started seeing signs of that just last year in Nigeria alone. I mean, those who follow the news, you know exactly the number of things, you know, that really happened. So these are things that we should begin to consider. Yeah.
I think one that is probably the most poetic explanation I've ever heard in thinking about, you know, how to grow an economy from emerging to a developing market. So I love that. You know, you mentioned around the risk and threat that sits, you know, across the ecosystem. I was just at a legal event the other day, and they were saying about when you're looking at the amount of fraud that sits into like fiat in itself in the ecosystem, that actually, you know, digitization of this is so fundamental, right? But also for trade, you mentioned that. So just want to move on as well, Frank. You know, you sit on the kind of more fundamental like side as well in terms of, you know, building true infrastructure there. So maybe talk us through some of the things that have been top of mind before we kind of move on and dive deeper into some of these other sections.
So from where we sit, we enable fintechs and other organizations. Some of the things we've actually observed is challenges with compliance and also regulatory issues. So there needs to be more enablers to help these fintechs to ensure that they're able to comply properly with whatever requirement it is for the government. So using examples, you see lots of new regulatory frameworks saying you need to do proper KYC for your customers. If these customers do not meet this KYC requirement, you have to terminate these customers or you need to churn them. So the government needs to support the ecosystem to provide the right enablers to ensure that these fintechs, other organizations, are able to do proper KYC or verification for their customers. That's also where we do come in as a business.
Join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi in February, where African tech connects. Please visit africatechsummit.com/Nairobi for more details. Use discount code RAINEST, that's RAENEST, to receive a discount off delegate passes. To hear our latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel on your favorite app. You can also visit africatechsummit.com for our upcoming events and news.
Amazing. One key theme definitely that I think brings us together when we think about the state of African fintech is clearly regulation and compliance. So let's unpack that a little bit more. Babs, I think you earlier were talking about, educating the regulator as well. I think that was a common theme. So I guess I would love to hear your thoughts on like, what does that look like and what have been the relationships that you feel like maybe need to drive a little bit more further and what can, I guess, the fintech ecosystem do in order to help that education happen for a regulator? So, I don't know who wants to maybe take that one first.
I mean, I'm happy to go. I think, you know, if we look at it just even from a generational gap in terms of the players and the individuals, most people in the fintech domain are quite young and sort of quite, I would say, courageous or maybe naive in some cases, probably in my case, naive, about what is possible. The regulator typically, by default, is more cautious, and in a lot of instances, probably older from another generation. So there needs to be that bridge first, a generational gap, even to be able to have the confidence to sit across the same table and explain what you're trying to do confidently. I mean, the traditional banks have a very strong relationship, you know, at least in Nigeria, in the form of the Bankers Committee. So a lot of dialogue happens there. The fintech community doesn't have that same level of collective dialogue. So that's already a disadvantage in the education process. I also think there is, because the way sort of fintechs have emerged from a funding perspective, most investors, not that they don't care about regulation, they do, but I think they care more about growth. So grow, don't break the rules, grow, you know, so it's sometimes can contradict. So, you know, there also needs to be that balance between, you know, we're regulated entities, you know, we have to accept that there is a limit to how we can grow. If we apply strictly sort of, for example, KYC policies to the letter, in emerging market, we wouldn't have a lot of customers just because a lot of the ask is just not available to you know, those that we're trying to serve. You know, how many sort of individuals in sort of 200 million plus population in Nigeria, as an example, have a utility bill. You know, there's not a lot. So we have to be creative, and it doesn't mean we don't do KYC or we're not compliant, but we have to be creative in in how we do that. And we have to carry the regulator along in that journey so that we're on both sides are on the same page. I think what has happened historically is perhaps fintechs have operated more on the naive side and just got on with their business. Hey, you know, I have this tech, I can do this. You know, I'm small, nobody cares anyway. But, you know, then I become big, then they care, then they come, then it's a problem. You know, so we need to take from the leaf of sort of those that have been on the ground, you know, sort of the traditional players, and really work as a team with the regulator. And I think that way, you know, things will be a lot better. Regulators just don't want to be caught off guard. They don't want to be embarrassed. You know, they know they're behind in innovation. So we have to help them get up to speed. Otherwise, it's going to be the big stick and, you know, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, certainly. And I think it's an age-old tale, right? I mean, we saw this in the UK when fintech started, is that it wasn't taken very seriously. It was like, oh, you're never going to survive until suddenly you're seeing these very major, you know, especially on the consumer side, fintechs. And regulators are slow for a reason, but I think it's about, you know, how do you partner and how do you ultimately help on that? Frank, you mentioned just now as well in terms of, you know, how critical that is. Can you talk us through, I guess, some of the initiatives that you're involved with Seamfix in order to help drive that conversation forward?
Okay, yeah, so let's look at some of the requirements for customers to be onboarded, right? So using Nigeria, for example, we say we're a population of 200 million people. And in reality, one of the key requirements now to onboard your customers is you verify your NIN or your BVN. But distribution is still a problem because out of the 200 people, only about 110 million people actually have digitized identities. So even the growth for the fintechs are quite limited because if you're putting that as a dependency, it implies that their growth is kind of capped, because you've not captured the entire population and you're making that a requirement. So from the government side, there needs to be work as well to ensure that there's proper distribution so that the enablers in terms of the identity is available for this fintech so they can grow their businesses and better, yeah, so.
So I'd be really curious to hear from your perspective, you know, being at quite a large fund, you know, what is the work that you feel investors have to play in order to also help the regulator understand why not only funding these businesses is critical, but also supporting them in helping leapfrog some of that regulation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the role you can play as an investor is a lot of education. And I've seen quite a few investors in the ecosystem, myself included, spend some time with a lot of regulators to try to explain and sort of, to Babs's point, create that, like, to kind of close that knowledge gap that exists. Because you kind of have to understand where they're coming from. And unfortunately, structurally, a lot of these regulators are not really set up to evaluate and revise policies frequently and on a regular basis. So you get into a position where you're sort of outpacing whatever regulation exists. And it kind of becomes your responsibility to manage the regulator in a way. I think there's ways to stay on top of it, and the best fintechs I've sort of seen are in very close contact with regulators and sort of complying as the regulation starts to take shape. But I think that the role we can play more generally is just to play a role of education around what it actually looks like in other markets and what it actually means, and then obviously compliance long term, because regulation exists for a reason. And then I think from a scale perspective, as you're sort of expanding across borders, especially for financial technology, because you're always going to run into this regulation hurdle, which is a healthy hurdle, but a hurdle nonetheless, I think what I've seen a lot of people start to do more and more is to explore partnerships to leverage each other's like licenses and each other's like footprint in these markets, and then also to explore potential acquisitions of smaller companies to be able to enter a new market faster.
Certainly, and you just touched upon cross-border, and actually it leads me perfectly to Shinenya and also Stephen. I'd love to hear more in terms of, especially in like the payment, settlement, remittance space. Talk me through in terms of what that looks like, especially being in so many multiple markets. How do you manage that relationship with the regulator?
Okay, so, I mean, honestly, regulatory conversations are very interesting for me when it comes to payments. And I'll tell you why. You see, every single country in the continent has a different regulatory framework. I mean, if it were the same, we would have probably achieved like 100%, you know, expansion spread by now. You know, in the early times, it was easier to just, you know, go in there, get like a domestic, processor that has like the required certification licenses, etc., partner with them and just hit the ground running. And of course, with time, these things have changed. You know, I mean, Kenya is doing something different, South Africa is something different, you know, Nigeria, same thing, you know. And we've also come to realize that, like Babs mentioned, right, fintech keeps moving ahead of the regulation. But what we've seen within the past, I would say even 24 months, is that regulators are now more open to collaborating with fintech companies, especially the people that have been around for a while. Like, I remember in Nigeria when Interswitch even went to get like the license that they got from the people, they didn't know what they were giving them for. Like, you know, it's that thing where the CEO goes and he says, I need this license, give me, or what do you need it for? You know, that's what I want to do. And they say, take. And when they realize what they were doing with the license, they're like, wait a minute. You know, is this what it is? And of course, they now wanted to catch on.
Yeah.
But now they're being more proactive. They're bringing key players into the room to say, you know what, let's have conversations. Like, let's see, this is what we're trying to put in place. What do you think? Right? The key players that are in the market are saying, come give us your opinion. Tell us, would this work? Would this not work? How do we, you know, ensure that we're all aligned? You know, even when this, you know, like fintech companies want to create new ideas, they also try as much as possible to involve regulators. There are different regulatory bodies, you know, across in different, countries in the continent. And they get involved in these things. They come to an agreement, you know, they pass, you know, directives, and they're involved in the rooms making this decision. You know, it's not been easy, but I mean, it's a step in the right direction, right? Which makes it even easier, so that even before they pass like a directive, a few of the key players are already aware, they're already preparing the landscape, you know, so that it doesn't really shake their stability, you know, so much when the directives are being passed. I mean, currently we even have like an MOU in place between Nigeria and Egypt, right? And all of this is trying to move in the right direction. Let's even come together.
Mm.
Because it's working in isolation won't get anything sorted. Mm. You know, you create something, okay, yes, we want to be innovative as regulators, but we also don't want to, you know, stall businesses. We don't want to impact the economic growth or the ability to harness the economic potential while we're trying to, you know, be the regulators in the picture. So from a payment standpoint, quite frankly, what people like Flutterwave ensures that we get done is that we have, like, you know, the governance and regulatory desk that ensures that whatever market that we're engaging with, we're doing it the right way, right? We're engaging with the key players to understand what to do. We've done our digging. We're trying as much as possible to ensure that from a licensing partnership perspective, you know, we're covered, we're doing it the right way, you know, so that we don't end up running into any issues, maybe even similarly to what we've experienced in the past, you know, things like that. So it cuts across board. And I think when that collaborative spirit comes into play amongst not just even the regulators in a particular country, but also across the continent, we'll start speaking to each other more. Like Babs had mentioned, how the banks are a bit more collaborative within themselves. You know, fintech people across the continent, when we start talking to ourselves, you know, we'll know, okay, what are your problems? How can we fix it? Regulators too need to speak to themselves. They all have bodies, you know, to say, okay, how is it working in Kenya? Can we implement something? Because there are different nuances to different countries. You have to understand the people that you have. If you have, like what he had mentioned, you have unbanked, you have people in this area, how do you ensure that you do your proper due diligence so that you don't have any issues for the unbanked? They don't have IDs. In Ghana today, Ghana have postcodes. You know, you put in the postcode, there's no number. It's now that they started adding like numbers and things so that the streets are, you know, well, things like that. It's not like in the UK where you put in a postcode, everything pops out nicely. You know, in Nigeria, for instance, sometimes Google even gets the direction wrong. So we need to, I'll say village, right? Because this is the continent. Come together and be more collaborative amongst ourselves from a fintech standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint, and also the regulators and the fintechs. We need to work together to actualize, you know, that particular goal for sustainability and growth.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. And I like the kind of metaphor for village, right? I think we are an ecosystem, and over the last year, last couple of years, it's been really refreshing to see people coming together from different parts, you know, of the continent. And there's still just so much more we need to lean into and do. Stephen, just to kind of wrap up, like, I mean, what are kind of some of your top of mind things, you know, when working with the regulator, what do you feel like is a gap, and, you know, especially in the payments or settlement space, how do you go about that?
There's a lot the regulator still needs to know. It's still a lot about that. And Chinea has actually touched on the bulk of those things. We also, you know, have a system where before we get into any African country, definitely priority is, like, what does the rule say? What's the regulation? What are the processes and procedures, steps that we need to take? And then, you know, we have a team that's responsible for swinging things in, getting preparatory groundwork done, just to ensure that we are absolutely compliant. Because I don't know who mentioned it on the panel, somehow they are saying that, oh, these guys, they're small companies. Like, I think it was Shinem who said it, you know. They're giving, you know, fintechs, you know, the license, and they're looking at, you know, they're small, they'll soon die. So just, you know, give it to them. And all of a sudden, they are seeing, like, volumes being processed. And I think it was last month, May, when the Nigerian government kind of like sent a circular through the CBN on a cybersecurity levy, which, you know, was going to be, they were going to get fintechs and banks to do that. Like, for fintech companies, payment processing companies to be on that list, they must have seen, obviously, these guys are processing so much volumes that for us to get this money from the consumer, we better work with these guys. So they're obviously seeing something going on there. So one angle with which I'm looking at it is this, which is why, you know, I really, you know, buy into the idea of the need to have, you use the word village, right? Have, see this as an ecosystem for us to educate regulators. It's just like, I mean, for those of us who are parents, and we were all children, you know, before, we didn't know what fire was. So you see fire, you know, you want to put your hand inside the fire because it looks gloomy, it looks bright. Everything, you know, makes sense to you as a child, you just want to put your hand there. But as a parent, you know, you've known so much, and you have unconsciously trained yourself to say no to everything. Like, no, no, no. And then you tell your children, no, 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 no. So the regulators, you know, sort of like are seeing that these guys are getting so much traction. Something's going on, like, what could go wrong? And how do we fix, you know, things when things go wrong? Like, who pays for things when things really go south? So I guess these are some of the legit motives that could be spreading from some of the regulators, and if we don't really come together to really, you know, express some of these things, a number of the things that we're trying to do could just be like, you know, no, no, things could go south. What if this happens? What if that happens? So the coming together, you know, will help to further expose the regulator to what's important and the potential impact of what could have, how much, you know, we'll save, you know, and how we can, you know, enable a number of persons to even be financially inclusive. At scale, because it still boils down to what are we doing, and this speaks to what our vision is at Cora. We believe strongly in Africa's future, and for Africa to succeed, businesses in Africa must succeed. And we just, you know, position ourselves in the angle of enabling those businesses to be able to process payments, you know, across all through. We consider that as our mission to help to make that kind of a contribution. And so if we come together and collaborate, you know, have systems, you know, by which we can educate the collaborators. And we're trying to do that, you know, individually, but I think it's about time that we come together as a group, and then we begin to, you know, express a number of these things, you know, subtly basically educating the regulators to be on board with us and for us being on board with them so we can build a bigger, better system. Because in the end, we all win if we can make that happen.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And this will probably, this next, last segment will probably be delight to any regulator. But where is AI and Web3 in this space, right, for you and your business, like in general? I think it's been a resounding theme this year. Web3, in fact, actually has made quite the comeback. It was just at Money 2020, and most of the panels were in the first day all around Web3. And central bank digital currencies, as well as, of course, AI. I'd be really curious to understand, how are you navigating these new technologies? What do they mean for your business? And then just looking ahead also in the next 12 months, like, what do you anticipate, how that will potentially also bring in new entries to the market that might be a potential threat to, you know, how you do business today. Shanana, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure. I mean, AI Web3 is good, and it's been gaining a lot of traction within the past couple of months. You know, I'd say probably around maybe last 12 to 18 months, you know, a lot of fintech companies are adopting it, and it keeps developing in the continent. I'd say from a payment standpoint, yes, it's great. It's also equally good to utilize it for, you know, a lot of like KYC and all of that, you know, but also I'd say that from a payment standpoint, it's also very good to, explore it with caution. I see it blowing out, but I also don't think it's going to, you know, take over, you know, 100% or even 50%, you know, within the space, taking into consideration that a lot of things also will require, you know, a lot of human intervention with respect to the nuances, even in the continent itself, right? If you want to adopt AI across board or Web3 across board, and you have a lot of people that are from very different demographics, you know, that do not even understand, you know, this technology, you know, it will take some time. So I would say that not within the next 1 year or 2 years, you know, assuming it actually creates that, outreach or adoption, or gains that traction or adoption within the continent, because we still have a lot of people from different demographics, different backgrounds, that still are trying to even understand how to use feature phones. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, from a payment standpoint, you know, with regards to financial inclusivity, you know, and financial support with regards to payments, we try as much as possible to not just target people that are digital savvy, but also take into cognizance people that, you know, they're just trying to get by. How do I do my typical things? You know, I mean, we still have cash being the mostly utilized, you know, payment method for payments in African countries today. So when I'm asked about how Web3 and, you know, AI will, you know, move with payments or, you know, enhance, you know, fintech in the future or even now, I'm still a bit on, I'm neither here nor there, yeah, if you get what I mean. But I see what it's doing. I see what it's doing with regards to even media. You know, I see what it's doing around that whole, you know, in the continent, helping people with making their job easier. But I also know that a lot of fintech companies are still, you know, approaching it with a bit of caution, mm-hmm, you know, taking into cognizance the dynamics around the African space.
Babs, any thoughts?
I think that there's definitely a lot of potential and opportunities into, you know, helping businesses become more efficient, probably scale certain parts of their businesses a lot faster, for much better cost, you know, more cost effective. I think the obvious example, at least like for Okuda, for example, is, you know, we have, whilst we have a lot of customers, they're not necessarily super affluent customers, but they still need to be treated like VIP customers. You know, that's expensive. You know, I'm sure, you know, the customer service agents that we have, we probably pay more in annual salary to what we make on an individual customer. So it's like the balance between serving customers, you know, at a really high level, you know, to the cost of it. So I think AI can obviously help in from that perspective. You know, I kind of look forward to the day where, you know, I kind of have one agent that will serve, you know, millions and millions of customers at the same level with the same consistency. You know, so those are the kind of opportunities I think we have. It's how do we sort of apply the technology to the right use case for your specific business. The customers won't necessarily always understand it, you know, but so long as they just get better service, and if it helps us to deliver better service, then yeah, I think it's great. Yes, we need to be cautious, you know, as with anything. Yeah, you know, just like I think it's almost like that dichotomy where you have the, we talked about regulators and innovators, and regulators are being cautious. You know, it's kind of like the same, the similarities. You know, we need to be a bit cautious of sort of AI, and, you know, is it going to move faster than, you know, we're thinking, and sort of overtakes even the innovators. But I'm very optimistic. I think there is a huge future. I mean, whether we like it or not, it's coming. There's a huge tsunami that's coming, and the quicker we get to sort of start understanding and how we can sort of work with the technology, I think I think the better.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that as well, Frank? I mean, you guys are touching that data space all the time.
Yes. So the opportunities, right, and benefits of it, the personalized financial services, improved customer service with AI bots, and also streamlined risk assessment processes. But there's a big risk that's going to become more apparent, which is Gen AI when it comes to customer onboarding and face authentication. So what does this mean? So if I was to onboard on, say, Okuda, for example, I believe I need to verify my ID, right? But now with the birth of AI, right, or advancement of AI, I could, for example, create a video or a picture, right, of someone that I'm using their credential to onboard, but not necessarily the person. So if the right processes and technology is not put in place, it means you could get lots of accounts that are being created or opened that are not really tied to the original owners of that account. It means even transactions that require face authentication could not be authenticated using generative AI videos or images. So there needs to be the right technology, which people like us are trying to build, to ensure they're able to trap those processes. So I do not onboard an account that's actually meant to be for her, for example. Do you get? So that's another problem that's going to become more apparent with time.
Yeah. And Stephen?
Yeah, so I actually, you know, support 100% what Bab said, because I mean, whether we like it or not, it's coming. It's even here already. Web3 is here, AI is here. At Coral last year, we had to start consciously. We started to develop an AI and data team. We already had a data team, but we expanded that team to become an AI data team. Because now we've amassed so much data, including transaction volumes, you know, over time, and we need to even learn from that. So our AI data team, you know, so even currently now, was for them to understand the data, and we search data, and they're building and training ML models to solve a couple of problems. So say, for instance, on fraud. Oftentimes, you know, we are reactive in dealing with fraud. We want to be proactive. So developing an ML model that monitors transactions, for instance, now to understand and understand patterns, and that ML model is trained to detect ahead of time and predict actions. So that's what our AI team, they're working on things like that amongst other use cases, because it's here, it's coming. I mentioned something initially about even though, you know, there are things that we could tolerate when it has to do with fraud. 0.02% of $1 million is different from 0.02% of $100 million. So how much do you want to lose and how proactive do you want to be? So we don't want to play catch up. I mean, it's I think it was Bob Noyce who talked about the need to be paranoid. You know, I used to think it was a bad thing, you know, but being paranoid sometimes, you know, can get you to take proactive moves just to make sure that you put the quality systems in place to hedge against potential risks.
Awesome. And last but not least, and then we'll wrap it up. But from a you know, investor perspective, what's top of mind there?
Yeah, I think it's going to play a big role in like being able to actually process, understand, and move with data. Because I think the first wave of innovation in any emerging market is like digitizing offline behaviors. And now, not to say that everything is digitized, there's still a lot of opportunity there, but we have more data than we ever have. And so from an analysis perspective, from a decision-making perspective, there's so much that can be optimized across the board. I'm particularly very excited about fraud as well. I think there's so much you can do there, and it's such a big pain point in financial services generally, so AI can play quite a crucial role. Of course, there needs to be governance, and of course, there needs to be caution. And I think there's also going to be an interesting debate over versus, like, should you be buying these solutions as customers or should you be building some of these solutions internally? And what does that mean from a data sharing perspective? Especially for a lot of these machine learning models, like they need to be trained on a ton of data to be able to recognize these patterns and sort of flag things. So what does that look like? What does the data infrastructure around it look like? I think there's big, big questions on that, but super excited.
Well, listen, as always, this has been such a fantastic, energetic panel. I just want to thank everyone for your time and a big round of applause.
Join us at Africa Tech Summit Nairobi in February, where African tech connects. Please visit africatechsummit.com/Nairobi for more details and use discount code RAINEST, that's RAENEST, to receive a discount off delegate passes.